Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Howdy, hour number two. What's happening? Tiki and Tierney coming alive for the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Monday after the Masters, but we turn the page to hoops. Hoop that is. NBA underway as well. Started with a bang down in Philly. The Brooklyn Nets going on the road, taking out the Philadelphia 76ers. And then you got a good game followed by an unwatchable game, then a good game followed by an unwatchable game, which is kind of what you get in the first round. It's not stunning that every game wasn't incredibly competitive, although I was very surprised that the Rockets won by 30-plus points. I'd like the Jazz to win a couple of games in that series. I didn't see the first game going quite that way. I think we all thought the Nets had a puncher's chance.
Yeah.
Embiid was banged up. Mm-hmm. No real pedigree for the Sixers yet. All the pressure on the world for them. Nets are going to play loose and play hard. And, you know, one of the things that's been dissected a lot about the 76ers here, because their talent level, you know, I was going to say it's through the roof, but I stopped myself here because let's look at these in terms that apply to today. Are the 76ers truly overflowing with talent for the modern NBA?
I don't think so.
Me neither.
Because they don't have the shooters. They have a few, which are amazing if they get opportunities. Tobias Harris didn't take nearly enough shots in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Butler kind of like reinforced his alphaness in this game. I don't know if that's for the best. Mm. And Ben Simmons can't score. He can't shoot. He's a liability, especially when it's slow and you get down late into these shot clocks, BT, and it's like somebody's got to shoot. And if he's not in pace and like making you as a defense react to him, you know what he's going to do, or you know what he can't do, which then stifles the offense, especially given that Joel Embiid coming off a knee injury, he's 100% back to the basket in the paint, right? So it's like, what actually are you doing here, right? What's innovative about this offense right now? Not a lot. What's innovative about the Booker Nets, though, is D'Angelo Russell and Caris LeVert were on fire. And
Harris played well, too.
Absolutely. Doing exactly what they felt like they needed, getting deep into the paint, making, you know, crazy circus shots. And that's what you would expect of Philly, but it's not what we saw. Now, do I think Philly, you know, finds a way to get themselves right? Yeah, of course. But it's alarming when you drop a game one at home and then lose your home court advantage because anything can happen now. And so the 76ers have a lot of issues. Some of them are on the bench.
Which
we'll get to in a second.
Yep.
But I think the majority of them are actually in their style of play and how they're considering playing in the postseason.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, it's funny. If you were just walking to a bar, right, and you just want to have a conversation about the 76ers, and you're not predisposed to either position.
Yeah.
You go in there with an open mind, and you sit down, you order a drink, and there's a guy or a gal next to you, big basketball fan, and they want to talk just about the 76ers. You can frame it that the 76ers are on this incredible arc, the early stages of what could be a championship trajectory.
Yeah.
Or you could point, and this is the position that I would take, they have a point guard who can't shoot.
Yeah.
They have a transcendent big man who isn't always physically reliable. They've got an alpha who believes he's an A-plus player, and he's a B-plus player.
That's
and
right.
When he's on, he's an A-minus player, to be fair to Jimmy Butler.
Yes.
But Jimmy Butler's not what Jimmy Butler thinks he is. And then what might be most disconcerting, I think he's a good basketball coach. I mean, obviously coming from the Spurs and Pop, and that tree's been, you know, he was taught the right thing. But the fact that Amir Johnson and then Joel Embiid believe that they can bust out their phones on the bench tells me all I need to know about how Brett Brown does not have that room.
Yeah, you're right.
That's all I need to know.
Because you can't imagine that that's in any way okay. Now, I know that Amir Johnson said something like his daughter was sick and they were checking on, but I mean, it's the middle of the game.
It's ridiculous.
You know,
it's ridiculous.
Have your boy behind you you know, and not that you want to give up your phone. That may be what it is. But have the assistant coach check and whisper it in your ear. Mm-hmm. Something, there's ways around this. It just looks bad.
Yes, it does.
I mean, it's almost, you can almost read because of the way that the technology is. I wish we...
You could blow it up. I'm surprised nobody's enlarged it enough where you could actually, and then flip it upside down and read it.
You're right. But it's just, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me why Joel Embiid, who's as, I don't know, superstars of a player mm-hmm. on and off the court as there is, would open himself to criticism like this in a playoff game that you lose.
Yeah,
if they're
exactly.
winning by 30.
Even if you win by 30, it's bad luck.
I
hear you.
But even if they're winning by 30, you don't care, right? You're like, yeah, he's an idiot.
Spurs still wouldn't do that.
You're right.
Certain team. I don't think the Celtics would do that with Brad Stevens. And I'm not saying he's Popovich, Brad Stevens.
You think this
but there's a culture.
You think this is the beginning of a...
Of the end for Brent Brown?
Yeah.
Yes, I do. Hmm. I've thought that for a while. I want to play this from Brett. And here's what he said about, again, Amir Johnson. And then eventually Joel Embiid got pulled into this. Here's coach after the game.
It's completely unacceptable. And second, we will deal with it internally, I'm sure, very soon.
Suspensions or...
I can't comment. I only learned it walking down the hallway. And so, like, I stay with those 2 points, Keith. You know, it is not something that we are about. And I really don't even know, you know, I think all of us should sort of learn a little bit more than maybe certainly I do. But on first glance, you know, it is not something that we are and certainly don't condone. And the club will deal with it.
Now, just to be fair, for those who might not buy the fact, and I believe that Brett is very believable, very forthright, that happens all the time, where a head coach is made aware of a situation literally as he's walking to the inner room. You live this as
he's
a player.
He's on the other end of the bench.
Here. No doubt about it. So I don't think he's lying to us right there.
Yeah.
But the fact that they believe that they have a license to do that is utterly unacceptable, and they're playing again tonight. Win or lose, the reporters will circle back because they'll. And if I'm a reporter there, and I would say, you know, Brett, on Saturday, you said you didn't know enough about it. You just learned about it. You said you would deal with it internally, but now that you've had some time to deal with it, what exactly, you know, what is the protocol? What is the process? How have you guys handled this? Now, coach might say none of your business, and that's fine as well. You don't have to divulge everything, but that question should be asked postgame tonight, win or lose. But you asked me a serious question. Do I think that this is the end of the road for Brett Brown? And I do. I do. Because I think they might even find a way to win this series.
Yeah.
They're not going to go as far as the people in Philadelphia believe that they should go, nor do I believe they're going to go as far as management believes that they should go. And, you know, they gave Brett, which was a good thing, a long leash to absorb those losses with no roster, trust the process, take it on the chin. A soldier, great soldier for the franchise, a great frontline guy who really his win-loss record is permanently stained because he played with a bunch of G League players for a greater cause. But Brett Brown's not the coach that's going to get you to a championship.
Yeah.
And they're supposed to be moving in that direction.
Well, it feels like that because it just the things that matter aren't being taken care of. Right? The scoring, droughts that happen, the lack of your point guard being able to be a scorer in any way. I mean, I know that point guards are important. I know in the old school NBA, if you had a guy who could distribute and create for his teammates, there was nothing more valuable than that, especially mm-hmm. creatively and athletically, as Ben Simmons does. But in today's, you have to score. You have to be able to score. Right? You look no farther than the Toronto Raptors. Yeah, I know that Kyle Lowry, absent of him scoring, played phenomenal, to be honest with you.
That's amazing, though.
It is.
What he did.
But he scored zero buckets.
It's amazing.
None. He had 0 points, and they lost by 3 to an inferior Orlando Magic team. Mm-hmm. Make 2 of them. Make 2 and a free throw. You know what I mean?
Yep.
That's a difference in a game. So scoring matters, and the fact that Ben Simmons simply can't score at this point, still can't score at this point, and when you play slow, as some of these teams are going to start learning, you do with the 76ers, there's no chance that they have the win against really good teams defensively and offensively.
Here's the problem with Ben Simmons, too. He's getting older. I mean, still incredibly young.
Yeah, of course.
but he's gaining experience in terms of games played, mm-hmm. but he's not chipping away at what is an unacceptable deficiency. He doesn't attempt to shoot. So it's one thing if we're sitting here saying...
I'd rather him do Kyle Lowry.
Well, you have to, at least for spacing purposes.
Yeah, I agree.
You're never going to get to 40% if you don't get to 20%. And it's going to get ugly, or it's going to be an ugly process to go from, you know, zero to maybe 14% to 24%, whatever the increments might be. And that's where you got to, you know, you got to put your time in during the summer. That's where you address weaknesses, a left hand, a jump shot, a three-point shot. That's where the great ones get in the laboratory and come up with a move that counters what you expect the initial move to be. Jordan's fall away, Kobe's fall away, Hakeem's dream shake, Ewing becoming a jump shooter. That's what the great ones do. And I don't even see, I'm not saying that Ben Simmons isn't trying to get better at his craft, but, you know, we're going to be at this rate, Teague, 4 or 5 years into his career,
yeah.
and it's going to be all guesswork still.
You're right.
Can he become a good shooter? I don't know. You got to put some shots up.
You're right.
For me to come up with a conclusion or at least an opinion.
Yeah, I don't overly rely all the time on plus minuses, but his was epically bad.
What was it?
Minus 21.
I've actually seen a lot worse, but in a playoff game, for I hear you, minus 21,
you're not going to win many games. For a favorite at home, you're not going to win.
With those, when you frame it that way, that is epically bad. At home against a team that, you know, again, the Nets are coming.
Are you worried about the 76ers not being able to finish out or win this series?
Teague, I said the Sixers in 6 or 7. It's on my Twitter account. This was before the first game. I already knew the Nets were going to win a few. I didn't think the Nets would win game one. I mean, that's flip a coin. Well, Nets could win.
You know what makes it worse is that...
And the Nets only shot 43% overall, by the way. It's not like the Nets shot 52% and had this radical overachievement based on what they generally do.
Yeah.
They shot 43% and they still won.
The big issue coming down the stretch for the 76ers was the health of Joel Embiid. Now, he played. Only played 24 minutes.
Yep.
But now, down 0-1 with... You know, already have lost home court advantage. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has to play.
Got to play
significant minutes. Jimmy Butler talked about this after the game, and he probably was right, especially given how ineffective he was at times.
I tell him all the time that at the end of the day, it's about him being healthy. Yeah, he can help us, but at the same time, he can hurt us if it gets worse. Like I said, don't get me wrong. We definitely want Joe out there, but we definitely want him healthy.
5 of 15 he was from the field, 0 for 3 from 3-point range. He's compromised. He's got a bum knee, and for a big man, there's only thing worse. One thing worse than a bad knee, which is a bad foot, which is what he used to have.
Yeah, true.
So he's got a bad knee after coming off of a bad foot from 2 years ago. They had him on minute restrictions,
mm-hmm.
and they're at their most critical point, I think, in this young team's moment because Brooklyn's no slouch. Mm-hmm. Like they're seated low. Simply because of circumstance, they're not as a seventh seed like you would think they would, or a sixth seed like you would think they should be.
I agree. So as we wrap it up here, we'll get back to basketball third hour. But who's sweating more right now? The Sixer fans, the Nugget fans, or the Raptor fans? Pacers know they're going to lose with all due respect.
I would say Nuggets.
The Nuggets.
I would say Nuggets. The Nuggets had the second best record in the West.
Mm-hmm.
I mean number two seed in the West for. The majority of the year, and in the ones that they weren't second, they were number one in the West.
Yep.
Right? And nobody believes that they can actually win a series.
The only difference, and not just to play contrarian, but I think the one difference, again, I'm talking about like the angst that sets in within the fan bases. Because players compartmentalize it totally. Yeah. You know that. Totally different. I think the fact that, you know, for Sixer fans who have been trying to scale this icy mountain for years, and they get in, and then they get kicked in, and they get back, they kick it. This is the first step of Denver's renaissance,
This
is kind of step three for Philly.
They were on par with the Warriors.
But everybody knows that they're not. Even Nuggets fan knows they can't shine the Warriors' shoes.
Yeah, true.
If they're honest, especially, if they're delusional, they don't do.
Especially because in the games that they played, they got waxed.
They got waxed.
Especially the last one.
They got waxed. But Raptor fans got to be sweating a little bit as well. Because if they get bounced early, there's no chance they retain Kawhi. Their only hope is to have a deep run, and that's how you keep Kawhi. You get bounced early.
I didn't even think of that complication. Yeah.
It's kind of intertwined there.
Yeah, you're
That's
right.
Something to worry about.
You got one shot with Kawhi.
Yeah, I agree. One shot. Michael Lombardi, by the way, we'll switch it up. Get to football coming up next. Russell Wilson, this is This is interesting enough where we've got to go to a source and get some real answers here. We'll do that coming up with Michael, former NFL exec, works for The Athletic here. Posturing, does he really want to stay with Seattle? Is he trying to manipulate this and work his way to Tiki's Giants? We'll find out. Coming up next, Michael Lombardi, Tiki and Tierney, some NFL, CBS Sports Radio.
Some folks like to shop in a store, while others prefer to do their shopping online. But no matter how you like to shop, when it comes to auto parts, shop at O'Reilly Auto Parts. They have everything you need under one roof, virtual or otherwise. From batteries, brakes, and belts to filters, transmissions, ignitions, and shocks, O'Reilly has it all. They even have a full range of farm and agriculture heavy-duty parts, tools, and supplies. They have thousands of parts and accessories in stock with brands you trust, like Wagner Brakes, Monroe Shocks, Superstart Batteries, Wix Filters, and more. They can even get those hard-to-find parts, most with free overnight delivery, or you can shop online with free pickup in the store. Car lovers also love to shop at O'Reilly Auto Parts, and now you can earn O'Rewards points online and at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. In fact, you can earn points any way you shop at O'Reilly Auto Parts. You'll get a $5 reward for every 150 points you earn. Visit orewards.com and become an O'Reilly O'Rewards member today.
This is Tiki and Tierney on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, Tiki, let's see what's happening here in the NFL. Obviously, a lot of stuff happening, and we're moving up to the draft. Tiki and I will be out there. It's going to be tremendous. Nashville, Tennessee is going to be popping. There's going to be a lot of trades, or at least we think there will be, but certainly no shortage of storylines. So we're getting toward the draft. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 1-855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Great news. Quick way to save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, save 15% or more on car insurance. And as we move toward Nashville, a few things to hit now. And we're joined by Michael Lombardi, former NFL exec. He's with the Athletic now, and Michael is with us here on Tiki and Tierney. Michael, how are you today?
I'm doing great, thank you. How are you guys?
We are good, Mike. You know, you've been a part of a lot of teams, and you've seen some remake themselves. You've seen some fail spectacularly. When you look at a team like the Seattle Seahawks, who have done so well over the last decade almost, feel like they're kind of splintering. What do you do with Russell Wilson right now?
Well, I don't think they're splintering. I think they're redefining themselves. I think what you're seeing is, look, Russell's a really good player. And, you know, and he certainly has been a part of their success. And a large part has been their defense. But, you know, it's the salary cap is not – you can't have everybody make all the money. And
yeah.
So, and I think that with the reality here is it's real simple. I think Seattle likes Russell. I think they would like to keep Russell. I'm not sure they want to enter into over $30 million a year for Russell, and I think there lies the problem.
Yeah.
I mean, they're always going to be a team built with defense. It's Pete Carroll's signature. They're going to run the ball. And let's face it, you know, there is times when Russell isn't as good as they need him to be because of his lack of height.
Yeah. Yeah, but here's the thing. He's the star. He's the icon. It's really hard to either trade him and start over with someone else. Or just I don't understand how you get this across to the fans and the public as the right move. You know what I mean? We like you and I know this because cheap labor wins, right? Especially at the quarterback position. But how do you convince a fan base that moving away from one of their icons is the right move?
Well, I think winning is the only thing that can convince them. I think winning is the only thing that can, and I think that's what you have to do. And you've got to convince them of the plan and convince them of exactly where you're going. And I think that's really ultimately what Seattle needs to do, is Seattle needs to figure out what they can do. And look, this is a negotiation. Seattle could be talking about trading them just so they could get them to come to the table and realize that, hey, look, Russell, you're really a good player, but you're going to need other players with you on the team.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I jotted a couple things down, Mike, that I want to get back to that you said the first thing based on Tiki's first question. You said Russell's a really good player. I would submit that he's a great player, which I think changes the entire tone of the conversation. So at the expense of being overly literal, do you mean he's just a really good player, or do you believe that he's a great player?
Well, I think he's got incredible playmaking skills. I mean, when the play breaks down, this is when Russell's at his best.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when the play doesn't break down, I think there are limitations in terms of what he can do and where he can go, and I think you've got to be careful with that. I think the word great gets thrown around. I think Russell's helped by a strong running game, I think he helps a running game. I think his foot movement and his ability to make plays. But when you just line up and say, okay, here's Russell Wilson, I don't care what's around him, Aaron Rodgers type of team, that's not who I think you're talking about. And I think that doesn't mean in any negative respect towards Russell. Mm-hmm. It just means that, look, he's going to need some people and pieces around him. And frankly, when the offensive line isn't as good as it needs to be, it actually helps Russell because it breaks down and he makes plays, which are what his signatures are.
And he could freelance a little bit. All right, so we're talking to Michael Lombardi with us here, a writer for The Athletic, former NFL executive, been a part of multiple championship teams. And something else you said, Michael, is that, Pete Carroll's signature is defense. No doubt about it. Wouldn't dispute that. The proof is in the pudding. But what I would submit is that just based on his age, Russell Wilson's going to be around Seattle a lot longer than Pete Carroll. So at what point do you stop submitting to solely what Pete Carroll wants and maybe think bigger picture beyond Pete Carroll?
Well, I think that they've already made a decision. They've extended Pete Carroll. I think Pete Carroll's a young man. I don't think he's an older, even though he might be older in age, I don't think he's an old coach. I think you have to study the DNA of Pete Carroll. You go back to when he got fired from the Patriots. He said to himself, he said, look, I'm going to go back. Whenever I get a job, I'm going to do exactly what I think is in the best interest of my team and how I act. He read the John Wood book. He decided when he went to USC, he became that person. And I think really what happened in Seattle a little bit is he's lost that identity. I think the salaries and the players, I think he wants to get back to that hungry grassroots team, kind of like when he first started with Seattle. I think that's what he's trying to do.
Yeah. Mike, you have a new podcast out, and I'm going to encourage everyone to go find it wherever you find podcasts, Apple Music, et cetera. The GM Shuffle, your first guest, is the great Peter King, who's amazing and has stories for days because he's been around the game for so long. But let's hopping back into the AFC, the Cleveland Browns, a team you know well, are the trendy pick to turn it around, I guess is the best way to put it. Are you buying what they've put together so far?
Well, look, I think that there's talented teams and there's teams, right? And there's good teams. I think there's talent on the Browns team. Do I think they're a good team? I think it remains to be seen. I think there's a lot of things that have to happen for the Browns to be good. I think a lot of things have to come together, and the chemistry in that locker room is going to be the most challenging of all. And I think they have certainly talented pieces, but when you're building a team, it's not the most talented team that wins. I mean, just ask Duke. Duke's going to have three guys drafted in the top 10 of the NBA draft.
You're right.
And they had a hard time beating Central Florida. So I think you got to be real careful. We're not trying to build – we're not collecting talent. We're building a team. I'm not sure that the Browns are that. I think their chemistry, their lack of willingness to take high-character players, they're willing to take risk on some character guys, I think it ultimately affects their team.
Yeah, what do you think the Odell Beckham Jr. effect is going to be as a former Giant, I'm asking?
Well, I think, look, when Odell says right before a game, he goes stay at the hotel, he wants to sleep in his own bed, we'll see how things go. You know, I think there's going to be challenges that he brings to the table and how that challenges ripple down, whether, does it affect Jarvis Landry? Does it affect the other players? Does it affect Baker Mayfield? I mean, I think it's all coming together, and I think it's really challenging for a first-time head coach in Freddie Kitchens to be able to come in and be the offensive coordinator, but also be the guy in charge of building the team and getting cohesiveness. You know, Tiki, teams just don't come together because we all like to play. We all like to go bowling on Tuesday afternoon. Teams come together through the coach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It takes leadership. This is a paramilitary organization that has to follow through, and I think you're going to have to see that come through.
All right, so we're talking to former league executive Michael Lombardi. He's got a new podcast out. It just dropped about a month or so ago, and it's called
a week ago,
the GM Shuffle. And put him out. A month ago, it would have been number one on iTunes. A week ago, it was only up to number seven. And he's with us here on Tiki and Tierney. Reading the tea leaves, because we've tried to so many times try to parse and twist words and gather what Gruden really implies and what is going on. Is Derek Carr going to be on this team? What's the story there?
Oh, God. I think Gruden's the guy, the fat guy that goes to the grocery store and just starts throwing things in his cart,
Wow.
He loves everybody else's players. I mean, Kiki can ask Rondé. I mean,
Gruden
loves everybody else's players.
When I was
with him in Philadelphia, he hated every player that was at Green Bay. Hated every player in Philly. When I got with him in Oakland, he hated every player in Oakland, loved them all in Green Bay and Philly. And so,
you know, he loves a new team every single year. And so he's never really developed a young quarterback. I mean, that's the reality. You could say Brad Johnson. Brad Johnson was an older player. Rich Gannon was an older player. John has no young developmental quarterback on his resume at all at any time in his career. And so I'm sure he's frustrated with Derek Carr's youth.
Yeah, but then let me ask you this. I'm sorry. But, Mike, let me ask you this. Then why this anointing of John Gruden as a quarterback whisperer, this master of the quarterback position, why has it permeated for so long and so deeply when, you're right, he has not developed a single young quarterback? Why does everybody...
I mean, you're asking me that question? The media has a narrative, and then there's the trend narrative. I mean, you know, that's the reality of it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't deal in the media's narrative. I deal in my narrative. You do what you see. You know, it's like, you know, this guy's going to be a great player, but he doesn't play good. But it's okay. We'll make excuses for him. You know, the reality of it is you are what you are. People in the league know that. People in the league realize that, you know, that John's never developed. There's not one quarterback that you could say John's taken as a young player and developed into. It's a fact.
Yeah.
It's
no, Michael, I think what you're saying, because you've been on both sides, like I've been on both sides, what John did via his show on ESPN was open the eyes not only to the fans but interestingly to a lot of the media as well about what quarterbacks are looking at and what they should be doing and what they should be, you know, coaching 101 with quarterbacks. We all saw it, so all of a sudden we're like, oh, this dude knows exactly what he's talking about.
It was brilliant on his part.
Of course it was brilliant from a media
perspective. I wrote in my book, Gridiron Genius, I described the four areas of leadership, and John's really good in two of the four. Now, he's not as good in the other two, and that affects him when it comes to dealing with players.
Yeah.
But you're so right, Tiki. It's what I call management of attention and management of meeting. He can explain it really well. He captivates you with his ability. But the John Gruden in that room loved every player. The John Gruden in the draft room hates every player. there's two John Grudens.
Yeah, no, you're right. He's a little bit bipolar.
But they're both getting 100 mil.
Yep, exactly. Look, the new podcast is called The GM Shuffle. You had Peter King, April 10th was the first one. You can find it at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, all the good stuff. You also did a draft breakdown on your podcast. Are you in the camp that Kyler Murray's going one to Arizona? And if not, who is number one? And what happens with the situation with the Cardinals?
If I were the Cardinals, you know, look, I think it's going to be problematic at some point. You can ask Seattle, you know, what it's like to have a 5'10 quarterback. You can say, like, it's no big deal. Yeah, it is a big deal. 3rd and 8, when you've got to make a throw from the pocket and the rush is contained, just go back and watch the Patriots rush against Phillip Rivers, against Patrick Mahomes, and against Jared Goff. Watch those three games and watch how they rush the quarterback. And then you put the young 5'9", 5'10 quarterback in those situations and tell me how it's going to work out. And tell me what he can see on 3rd and 8 when he has to make a throw. You know, Brett Favre eloquently said it so many years ago. He said there's three kind of quarterbacks. One, he can throw the ball through the door. The second one can hit the doorknob. And the third one can throw it through the keyhole. Well, to throw it through the keyhole, you got to be able to see it. And if you've ever talked to any player in Oklahoma, whether it's been Baker Mayfield or Kyler Murray, they've heard in the, hey, man, I didn't see it. Hey, man, I didn't see it. That's a problem. And so if they go down this direction and they want to draft Kyler Murray, they're going to have to build the way to where people that rush him. Because if you're going to win a title, if you're going to win a Super Bowl, you're going to have to make a 3rd and 8 throw at a pressure point on the road in a tough game, and you got to throw it through the keyhole, and you got to see it. I don't know if that can happen.
Well, Michael, to pass on Murray, you know, you have to really like Josh Rosen. I mean, independent of what they think about Rosen, what do you think about Rosen?
Well, look, the guy has 14 interceptions, 11 touchdowns. It's one of the worst offenses in football last year. The offensive line was horrible.
Yeah.
But if I had a Josh Rosen fan coming out of the draft, no, I wasn't sure you could build a team around his leadership style and skills. Does he have the physical talent to be a player? Yeah, I think he did. But I'm not sure that the combination of when his mama listened from the crib, is he really a quarterback in terms of the leadership? Because, look, when you have a quarterback, that's got to be the face of your franchise. That's the guy. That's who we're building the team around. He's got to be the guy that generates the enthusiasm within the player locker room. He's got to be the guy. If you have a guy that can't lead from that position, it's tough to find leadership on your team.
Hey, good stuff.
Yeah.
Really good Tiki and Tierney debut. I think we're going to have to get Michael Lombardi back on the show at some point. Outstanding stuff right there.
Anytime, guys. Thank you.
You got it. Appreciate it, Michael.
Appreciate you, Michael. The GM Shuffle is his podcast. Now I got to go check this thing out. Peter King is great. Doing draft analysis work. All the things that he was saying makes a ton of sense.
I like it.
Makes a ton of sense. You got to see the keyhole in order to throw it to the keyhole.
That's true. We got to get. Although Wilson did win a Super Bowl and almost won two, if they would have called the different play.
But they
had
a great run game and a phenomenal defense.
As much as Michael made a, Michael forgot more football than I'll ever know. I certainly grant him that. But the one thing that I would caution Seattle and Seattle fans about, although I don't think Seattle fans want to see Russell Wilson leave, but Rick Myer, Seneca Wallace, Tavares Jackson.
You don't want to go back to
that.
You
could easily go back there.
Never.
And show me the one wide receiver physical specimen. Show me the Julio Jones. Show me the Beckham. Show me the guys like that.
Yeah. With all due respect to Doug Baldwin and Golden Tate. Love those guys.
Love them. Respect the hell out of them. They're not transcendent physical players.
You're right.
And look what he does with them.
You're right.
I mean, I love Russell Wilson, but we'll see. All right, coming up next, Football at the 40 after Ack, who is right now. Here's Rich Ackerman.
This is Tiki and Tierney on CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, Football at the 40 is coming up next here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. First up, though, time now for Doing More. And it's brought to you by the Home Depot, the next generation of home improvement. Everything you need to do Project Smarter. It's the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. We take a look at a player who's doing a whole lot for his team. Marcus Morris poured in 20 off the bench yesterday to provide the Celtics with a spark. 84-74. Tough to watch. Over the Pacers yesterday, game one, that series is going to be just ugh. I mean, Pacers are going to play hard. They just don't have the horses. We know that. Not trying to diss them. They're just not nearly in the same vicinity. Even when the Celtics don't play well, they're still not going to win. Morris was a plus 15, added 7 rebounds, game two with Celtics Pacers Wednesday night in Boston. Okay, we get back to Tiger Woods. Third hour, that's how we started. That's how we'll finish. Monumental achievement. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, and Sirius XM Channel 206. Real quick, can you offer a summation, travel summation?
Oh, it was nuts.
Before we get to Football at the 40s of your weekend, Tiki.
Yeah, going over to France, to Paris.
Yep.
Left here, went straight to the airport.
Yep.
Landed at 11 a.m., Paris time, because obviously the time difference.
Uh-huh.
Got my bib, went to my buddy Chris Birch's house, which is this big chalet.
It's not a house, it's a mansion. It's a palace.
Senil, or Senlis, which is about 30 miles outside of Paris.
How'd you get there? You took an Uber?
No, I drove. I rented a car.
You rented a car?
Yeah.
Really. You didn't know where you're going?
No, I just kind of figured it out.
Did you use Waze in Paris?
The Apple app, whatever's on my phone. It was great. It actually took me right there.
All right.
He had a dinner party with some friends that he knew from the local area. You know, they stag hunt, like get on horses, hounds chase down stags, and it's crazy. Listen to these stories.
Are you serious?
It's like the forest of France, rural France.
Yeah,
it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Had a couple of tequilas, maybe a little bit too much wine.
Uh-huh.
Woke up the next morning.
Ran.
And went through a little stroll through Paris, which was beautiful, by the way. It was absolutely gorgeous. About mile 16, I was telling BT this earlier, my body said, yeah, you've about had enough. I just started chilling, going much slower.
Walking?
A little bit of walking. Mostly running, but a little bit of walking. Took some pictures. But then I got back late last night. So I went Friday, got back Sunday night, and I wake up this morning and see what's happening over at the Cathedral de Notre Dame, which is, it's a shame. It's saddening. You know,
especially Easter week, Holy Week.
Easter
Holy Thursday,
week,
Good
Holy
Friday,
week.
Passover. I mean, it's terrible.
Beautiful, beautiful cathedral. I haven't been there in 20 years.
Uh-huh.
But Tracy and I are going back in 2 weeks just to view. Obviously, we won't be going there. But you think of the history and the artwork. And I know they saved a bunch of it, but still. It's if you've been watching the news at all today, Notre Dame is burning, and the firefighters over there said they have about 45 minutes or so to determine whether or not they're going to be able to save it.
Oh, boy.
Which is crazy.
Yeah,
so
we're praying for them for sure.
No
doubt about it. So Tiki was in and out this weekend. Finished the race, which is
number 10.
Which is the object. Hey, number 10, historical number 10. One. Do you have the bib set up?
Tracy's got them all.
You got them all lined up in the wall in the man cave?
She's got them all lined up, which
all
is
right.
great.
All right. You got about 100 more. Then you make the whole thing. You're just starting, buddy. Football at the 40s. Here we go.
40-yard kick, right hash mark.
40 yards on the return.
A 40-yard touchdown.
40 yards.
You love football. We love football. So we give you football every day. It's Football at the 40 with Tiki and Tierney.
on CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, we start with the world champion Pats and their conditioning phase of the voluntary offseason workout, which begins today. Quarterback might not be there. Not expected to be in attendance. Tom Brady, as per many, including the NFL Network's Ian Rappaport. However, there's the thought that Tom Brady might be bulking up a little bit here.
Beefing up.
He's listed, Teak, at 6'4", right around 225 is what he plays at. And, you know, there's...
He doesn't feel like he's 225. He feels like he's like a buck 90.
You think so? I think he looks a lot. I think he looks actually pretty strong. Maybe because he wears a lot of armor.
Yeah.
He wears a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
That makes him look a little bit bigger. But the thought is he might pound on some real weight. I don't know, 235, 240. A heavier Tom Brady, would that be to his detriment or
no,
to his advantage?
I think this will be to his advantage, is that just stay healthy. As long as he doesn't disrupt his mechanics of his throwing motion, which I don't think are that big of a deal either, because he doesn't have a cannon any longer. Not that he ever really did. And most of his throws are lofty down the field, and it's more about precision across in the middle and stuff like that. But this allows him to stay younger, right? I always used to say this when I was playing, and it caught up to me really quickly because I took a pounding. Quarterbacks don't take a pounding. But the one way, really the only way to stay young is to get stronger. So, yeah, this will be good for him.
I don't like this. I mean, I'm certainly going to acquiesce to you when it comes to, you know, matters of the weight room for a pro football player. But to me, I mean, every athlete this certainly pertains to. But somebody like Tom Brady at that age, elasticity is key.
Mm-hmm.
You want to stretch the ligaments. And you start tacking on weight and you start doing things you haven't done in a long time. Yeah, when you get hit from the blind side, it might absorb it a little bit better. But I don't know. I'm a little less enthralled. If I'm a Patriots fan, I'm less enthralled than you made it out to be.
Doesn't matter. You just won a championship.
It might matter you're if he pulls something ever. On the second day of camp.
Yeah,
I mean, it could.
Lat sprain.
Listen, those oblique things are problematic for baseball players.
See it all the time.
You never know. Okay. You know what? I just threw this out. I need that. This one's about Jadeveon Clowney here. So he is not signed yet, as we know. DeMarcus Lawrence, he got his deal, 5 years, 105. But apparently that contract has not opened up the financial door for one Jadeveon Clowney. According to the Houston Chronicle right now, the sides aren't close to a deal. They don't see this happening anytime soon. Aaron Wilson of the Chronicle had this. He's not going to be involved when the team begins its offseason workout. Head coach Bill O'Brien deemed it as interesting. What happens here? What happens here with Clowney?
Well, look, this will get done. He's on the franchise tag. He has obviously the 1 year. I think it's like $15 or $16 million that he's making on the franchise tag. And the Houston Texans have money under their cap. So if they wanted to do a deal with Jadeveon Clowney, they could. I think they're going to make him prove it. Stay healthy. Like, you had some issues early in your career. I think you're past them. You're turning into a great player, all-pro type player. But prove it one more year, and then you're going to get paid. So he's going to have to wait. He signed his franchise tag right away, though. So
who do you think's better? Who would you prefer on your team?
Clowney or?
I think I would take Lawrence. I know Clowney's starting to kind of get to where we thought. I mean, it's a close one.
Yeah, I'd probably say Clowney. I think he's a better athlete, and you could use him.
No more explosive.
Well, you can stand him up.
Yep.
I don't think Lawrence, you can stand up.
That's true. All right, Frank Clark, relatively slow, you know, a couple days here in the NFL. Obviously, we're getting ready for the draft. And again, Teague and I will be out there in Nashville, Tennessee. But Frank Clark now, defensive end, who's good. Jay Clark wrote this on The Athletic. The trade talk regarding Clark has died down a little bit here. Listen, I don't know what Seattle's really truly thinking as they enter this offseason. Well, not enter, but as they, you know, midstream of the offseason. But, you know, to me, it's never smart to lose young players, talented players who are still in their prime.
Agreed.
I just don't understand
that. Here's the problem, BT, and I mentioned this with Russell Wilson. I said I'd get back to it. Frank Clark is also on a franchise tag. His number is a little bit higher because he was in the top 10. But Frank Clark's making $17 million. They don't have money to sign Russell Wilson and Frank Clark. So it's an or thing with one of these guys. They have, again, $10 million. Five of that 10 has to go towards the rookies that they draft in the upcoming NFL draft. So do I think they're more likely than not to trade Frank Clark? Yeah, I do. Unfortunately, they do.
Oof. See, that's the one thing about the NFL that really bothers me.
I hate it.
I can't stand
it. I absolutely hate it. because you get you develop these great players.
You get penalized.
You get penalized.
You almost get penalized for having great draft acumen. If
right.
you draft too many good players,
right.
eventually you can't afford
right.
them.
And if you're,
how is that fair?
And look, if you're lucky, like the Giants last year, uh-huh. you get an Odell Beckham Jr. Like, forget that he's traded and everything else. But you draft him outside of the top 10,
mm-hmm.
his franchise number is 8. It's
yes.
not 16.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So it's
yep.
almost like you got. I got to find the diamond in the rough. I got to find. And this is why these GMs are always searching for these diamonds in the rough. You're like, why in the hell did they draft that guy? Right? That's why. Because
mm-hmm.
they're looking for the guy that they can draft, get a fifth-year option that's
like
cheap.
Like Lamar Jackson.
It's like, exactly.
Last pick in the first
get
round.
Get a fifth-year option that's cheap,
mm-hmm.
and they can elevate your program for a couple of years until you really have to pay him. It's mm. the finances in the NFL, the way it works.
It's all whacked
it's,
out.
It's whacked out, and it's frustrating because it doesn't make logical sense to keeping a team put together.
Yep.
That was Football at the 40 with Tiki and Tierney on CBS Sports Radio.
Let me just throw these two items by real fast. The good news for Cowboy fans, Zeke Elliott shows up to the offseason program despite seeking the new contract, so it looks like his mind is in the right spot.
Yeah, also, he has zero leverage. They have not decided to pick up his fifth-year option yet. They will.
Of course.
But he has zero leverage right now, so of course he's going to show up.
And the other thing, I guess he kind of has to say this, Matt LaFleur, who is the new head coach of the Packers, he's not even 40 years of age yet, said, listen, all this McCarthy, Rodgers, that he doesn't care. I understand him saying that, but don't you think on some level he should care to make sure that they don't replicate
oh,
whatever
yeah.
went awry between
oh,
the two?
Yeah,
you better care.
You ignore history at your peril, kid.
It's true.
I'm
that's
serious,
true.
Well man.
Said.
Especially when it's the same principle on the other side.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. All right, speaking of history, our boy Tiger Woods. Tiger Woo, back in the winner's circle. That's next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.